Welcome to Make It Rain, hosted by me, Josh Smith. I'm a journalist and presenter, and I've been lucky enough to sit down and have unfiltered conversations with some truly incredible people. I know from my own personal experiences how powerful talking and crucially listening to others is. And without a doubt, my life has been changed by the people I've spoken to over the years, some of whom you'll hear from in this very series. I am so excited to invite you to join me each week to meet amazing queens who have overcome challenges in their own lives. They're open up about their journey they've been on to harness their power and wear their crowns with pride. I really hope you'll feel empowered to own your own story and make it rain in your own lives too. In this episode of Make It Rain, world champion heptathlete Katarina Johnson-Thompson takes the throne. Katarina, or KJT as she's known to her fans, road to gold medals hasn't been without its hurdles. See what I've done there? Having struggled with self-confidence and injuries, Katarina nearly turned her back on sport after, in quotation marks, public failure at the Rio Olympics in 2016. After switching up her mindset by working with a psychologist and moving to France with a new coach, Katarina won the World Championships in 2019 and became the world's best all-round athlete. Yes! During our chat, Katarina talks candidly about redefining what success means to her, the discrimination she's faced during her life, and how she's learnt to embrace her body image. We were all trying to find new ways to switch up our mindset right now, and there are so many amazing words of wisdom from this determined queen, so I hope you take as much away from this empowering conversation as I have. So crowns at the ready, ready, set, make it rain. KJT in the house, babe. How are we?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so excited to have you on Make It Rain.
I'm just excited to just talk to you. I wait for it every year and I just need to get my little dose of Josh.
You are such an empowering role model. And I think what's so amazing about you is that you never give up. Like, you're always there. You're always striving to be better. But when you think about who you were when I met you in 2016 to now, just before those Rio Olympics, how different are you as a person, do you think?
Yeah, I think the thing about me never giving up is definitely, you know, on brand for me. I think I'm always like one of those annoying flies who are just like bashing in the heads against like a glass window. But then if you say the glass window is like my championship record, like in Rio, then that's what it is. And I think that, yeah, one of the things about this lockdown, I think, is it's changed us all, never mind in the last 4 years. I think just in the last year, I think I've definitely changed and we've all definitely changed. And I think in Rio, in a sporting sense, maybe one of the things that's changed is my opinion of myself, where I think I used to put a lot of weight on other people's opinions of me sports-wise. So if I'd see like a journalist talk about me flopping on a main stage, then I'd assume that they were correct and I was wrong. Whereas I think now I'm more level-headed enough to know that, you know, I've got this and I've got a little tiny bit of belief in myself and I know that they don't know my journey and what I've been through. And yeah, I've just got a lot more belief in myself, I think. And in general, I haven't cracked it, but I think in a personal sense, what has changed about me, I would hope, is that I don't engage in negative thoughts as much as I used to. Yeah, and I think they're the two main things. I hope if I've diagnosed myself right, yeah, that's what it is.
How have you changed your mindset? Because I think it's so fascinating that you were in this space where you had this negative mindset and you've been able to change it and you've been able to become this incredible world champion athlete, which is such an incredible feat to achieve in life. It's just phenomenal. But how have you managed to change that mindset? Because I feel like we're all sat here right now being like, oh my god, I need to change my mindset, I need to get myself out of this rut. And you've actually been able to do it in your life. How did you manage to do that?
It's been a journey. It's not been overnight. I think in Rio, like after the Olympics, if we're talking about like my sports, like after the Olympics, I honestly had like the biggest sort of like rejig of my life. I wouldn't say breakdown, but I changed everything about my life. So I changed my coach, I changed where I live, broke up with my boyfriend, I did all these different things. And then I was looking for a solution and a way out. And there came a time after Rio where I just stopped looking for a coach because certain options for me didn't work out. And I think it took me, you know, some time to sort of say, this is what I want, this is what I'm good at. This is, you know, this is my choice to be an athlete. Nobody's forcing me to be an athlete. And what can I do to get to where I want to be? And I think it's taken a lot of time, and I had to build a lot of confidence and change people around me who believed in me and saw my talent. But yeah, it's just one of those things that I don't let myself have an option to give up. So that's when, you know, if I'm doing a rep and say like I'm doing a hard running session and it's five times 300 and I get to the third and I just think, oh God, I want to stop. Like, that's not an option. So you've just got to continue and not engage in those negative thoughts. Mm.
How have you done that? Like, what kind of practices did you put in place? Because did you have like a mind coach you worked with as well to do that?
I worked with a psychiatrist called Steve Peters, Dr. Steve Peters. He has got a book out called The Chimp Paradox. I don't know if you've heard of it or seen it, but yeah, I worked with him. And what he always says, you know, he's not a sports psychologist, he just knows the mind, and he breaks it down into three different things. So it's actually really quite interesting. He says you've got a chimp, a human, and a computer. And your chimp is like the emotional you. So when anything goes wrong and you sort of react with emotions, that's your chimp like hijacking your brain. And then your human is your rational one. So your human can see things going wrong and they can say, okay, this is why this is going wrong, this is why this is happening, and this is why you're feeling this way. And then your computer is just like the autopilot. So what you do each day, like you wake up, you brush your teeth, and you do everything on autopilot. If you drive to work, you know, sometimes you don't even think about the route because you're just on autopilot. And what he's tried to change in me is when I'm out and competing, I'm not acting emotional in my chimp. What I'm doing is just being on autopilot. And I know that I need to get this job done, and in order to do that, I need to do this, this, and this. So I don't want to bore you, but if I'm doing high jump, I need to run towards the bar, go over it, and that's all I need to think about. I don't need to think, oh, what if I twist my ankle on the takeoff, or what if I knock it, and then, you know, my competitor, like, all of these thoughts are useless and impractical, and they don't help you in any way, so don't engage in it.
Was it that simple of a transition?
No.
Did it almost just click?
No, like, it's really cool talking to him, because, like, I rang him up before a competition. I'm just like, why am I here? Like, I don't enjoy this. I'm nervous. I'm stressed out. I'm worried that I'm going to put myself out there to just fail again. Like, I'm really not enjoying this. And he's like, well, it's your choice to be there. You're an athlete and we're getting on with it. And it's like, I'll have a setback, a mental setback, where it's like I'm sort of reverting to that person who you met in 2016, who, you know, had no confidence and was scared to compete. And it does take time, but I think with habits, if you just do it every day and think about, okay, if this goes wrong, then that can be expected. If I get an injury, that's normal because I'm an athlete. I don't need to react in such high emotions for everything that happens in my life. And I think, yeah, it definitely takes time, and I still haven't cracked it, but I'm getting closer to cracking it. I don't think, actually, I'll take that back. I don't think I will ever crack it, but you just get better at handling certain situations.
Has it also helped you in your everyday life as well?
Yeah, for sure. Like, for example, the lockdown when Tokyo was postponed, it's like, it's out of my control. So what can I do? What literally can I do about it? And I think I could have reacted to that in a certain way where, you know, it's like, oh, I'm in the best shape of my life. Or I could, like, I don't know if I'm going to get injured now in this next year. I don't know if this is going to happen. I don't know if I'm going to be in the best position like I am. And all of those thoughts are useless. I just needed to do what I can each day. And I think it's harder to do that with every single thing that goes wrong in your life, but you do become sort of better at just batting away negative thoughts.
Mm. How close were you to actually quitting?
I was very, very close. I don't sort of, yeah, I haven't openly admitted it to a lot of people, but after 2016, I really didn't want to continue in the sport. I think I just had enough. You know, I went through a lot of bad years in the span of 2014 to 2016. I, you know, cracked my foot open. I had about 3 different quad injuries on the same quad. I had knee surgery. I had an adductor sprain. I had 3 no jumps in a major championships and the world championships. So that means that I came 25th. I had no points for one of the events. And, you know, all throughout this, I had media pressure. I had, you know, Jess Ennis Hill coming back from pregnancy and the media applying pressure for head-to-head battles as well, all when I was 21, 22, 23. And it was just, yeah, I got thrown into the deep end, I think. And somehow I do mourn my sort of development as a youth athlete coming into the senior champs, because I didn't have any of that. I felt thrown into the deep end after 2012. And yeah, after 2016, it was just me done. I stopped looking for a coach. I was just traveling Europe, really pretending to look for a coach, but just enjoying myself. I don't really know what the turning point was that I started trying again, but I just sort of settled into the routine of training and having a coach who, you know, believes in you and wanting to, you know, train again.
What's so incredible about being an athlete, and this is something I always find so fascinating, is we in as humans, like when we define success and failure, as an athlete, you have a very strong view of what success and failure is. So success is for you maybe a PB, or it's ending up on the podium, or it's getting this medal, or it's getting that. How has your definition of success and failure changed as you've gone through your life and you've been on this journey with it? How do you define success now, would you say?
Yeah, no, it's interesting what you say, because as an athlete, like, success is a goal. Success is comparing yourself to your personal best. It's not even comparing yourself to anybody else. Like, you have a personal best in all these different events, and if you don't achieve that, or if you don't get close to that, then that could be classed as a failure. For example, when I was 19, I competed in London 2012, and to get there was a huge success for me. Even though I came 15th, I was there, I was loving life. It was one of the best memories I've had in my life. And I came 15th, 16th in the competition. Left the competition thinking that was incredible. Fast forward to 4 years later, I went into Rio, the Olympics, as sort of favourite to medal, if not get the gold, and I came 6th. That was a huge failure in the eyes of me and everybody else, but when I look back on that now, it's like I should have known, but nobody really understood my path to get to that line in Rio. I had knee surgery the year before. I had a quad pull mid-season. I had zero confidence. I didn't want to train in case I got injured. And I didn't want to be there, and I still came 6th. I look at that now as a success. And you do have to change your perspective. For me now, when I went into Doha, I think one of the main things that's changed about me is that I went in there fully prepared to come 16th. As long as I did my absolute best, I was ready to come 3rd, 2nd, 5th. I didn't care, because I knew I was going in there, and I did everything in my possibility the whole year to get myself on that starting line in the best possible shape. And I knew no matter what I did, that doesn't matter, because I'm proud of myself for getting here and doing everything I could to put myself in the best position to come wherever I come, no matter if somebody's better than me on the day. And I think going into Rio, I was all like, gold or nothing. I don't want a silver medal. And now I kill for an Olympic medal. Yeah. It's still an Olympic medal. So I think it is all about perspective.
And I think let's get some perspective here, babes, and let's serve some facts to the audience, because you won the World Championships in 2019. And the heptathlon, for people who are not familiar with it, includes 7 sports over 2 days. The 100-meter hurdles, a high jump, a shot put, 200 meters, long jump, javelin, and then finally, to top it all off and put the cherry on top of that very exhausting cake, an 800 meters. And to win that title, no less, You beat the previous British record held by Jessica Ennis-Hill, and you smashed not just one, not just two, not just three, but four of your own personal bests. And as a result, babes, you secured the sixth highest heptathlon score in history. I mean, we stan a lot on this podcast, but my God, do I stan you for that. Like, that is so incredible. So when you're sitting here and you're hearing about your journey with your mindset, and then you hear those facts, how mad is it to think that you are that person?
Yeah, it's weird because, like I just said in the question before, it was the most relaxed I've ever been going into any championship doing that. And it was because I wasn't scared to put myself out there. I think sport, you put yourself out there. Like, I know that social media, it's sort of the same, but you put yourself out there for criticism. And I think, in Doha, I was the most relaxed I've ever been, and the results came afterwards. And I think it just shows you that, you know, when you get too caught up or when you overthink too much, it's never a good thing. You just need to sometimes trust yourself and believe in your own abilities. And yeah, that you were the result of that. And that was such a lifetime goal. I spoke about it before, but I was a young 19-year-old as part of those Olympics. It was my first ever senior champs, and I was there to witness, the whole country was there to witness Jess do that incredible thing, what she did. So, you know, it almost felt like it came around full circle, and no matter what in my career now, I've got that as a memory. So it's insane. Like, I'm just happy now. Like, I'm happy that that's a memory no matter what.
Yeah, because I mean, now you do have some amazing crown jewels, babe, / medals. but to get to that place in your life, I mean, you've had role models, you had Jessica Ennis-Hill, for instance, but who has passed the crown on to you in your own life, would you say? Who's inspired you the most?
I think inspiration-wise, I think it has to be my mom. You know, it's been a long time since I started the sport. I did it, my first high jump, when I was in year six, and that was when I was like 12, 11. And I think my mum, I've always wanted to sort of prove that she was right in believing in me, and right in like taking me to all these competitions when I was, you know, young athlete, who, when we had like literally no money, we'd take the National Express to like Stoke on Trent and do a competition in the rain. And like, I can't imagine ever loving someone enough to do that. So like, I want my mom to like, you know, reap all these rewards, that she was correct in believing that, you know, I had something there. We've done enough hours and enough of the hard stuff, like waiting at bus stops and losing too much to give up without ever winning. So I think my mum was definitely the person who passed on the crown of like, hard work will pay off, and believe in yourself and stuff, for sure.
Oh my God, I love that. For that moment when you won the world championships and you saw your mum for the first time, knowing that story and what you guys have been through and the sacrifices you've had to undertake, how amazing was that moment? Can you even describe it?
No, it was just a big hug. It was one of those, when we could hug, it was a massive hug. And yeah, she snuck into the mix zone, and she was just so, so happy. And she'd been texting me throughout as well. I don't like to look for her in the crowd because she's just a nervous wreck all the time. She is, and she can't, we're the same in the fact that we can't hide our emotions on our face. If I'm happy, I'm happy. If I'm sad, you'll be able to tell I'm sad. And when I look in the crowd, my mum is a nervous wreck and it puts me off. So I don't actually look at her until the end of the competition. So yeah, to see her actually smiling was, yeah, such a buzz.
Oh my God, it's so amazing. And now looking forward to this year, Tokyo 2021, Rewind second edition. How are you gearing yourself up for it? And knowing it's been postponed, has that kind of fueled you more in a way?
I can't really describe this, but with it being Tokyo 2021, like, as athletes, we always have the date in our calendar of when we need to, right, it's go time, we need to be ready. And sometimes you get that 4 years in advance, sometimes it's 1 year. And for Tokyo 2020, I had that date in my calendar and I was building and building momentum, and finally got to Doha, won, and it was only 6 or 7 months until Tokyo, and I felt like I was really on the right path to where I needed to be. And and my confidence levels were sky high. And I think with COVID happening, it's one of those things with time, it's, you can never, I know we talk about how slow January's been and how slow like a day can be, or like 1 month can go by in an instance, but like there'll be a day when you wake up and it's that dread, like whether that be an Olympic final, whether that be, you know, a wedding day, driving test, an exam, like you'll wake up and say, today is that day. And when Tokyo got postponed, it was just like I had got given all this time and I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't know whether to train harder and try and make myself even better. I didn't know whether to chill out and think, well, what if I get injured? I didn't know whether to, if I was to train and be better, that when I come back, I didn't know whether I'd be like completely wiped out and lose motivation. So it was one of those things where I was trying to juggle all this time and I didn't know what to do with it. So I have got the same motivations. It's the same goal. It's a different path, but nobody has ever been in this. I know we're all in it together as athletes, but nobody's ever been in this set of circumstances before where it's been postponed. So I find it mad interesting that there'll be a completely different set of Olympic champions now that this has happened. Because, you know, some people come back from injuries, some people come back from pregnancy, some people have got pregnant. It's one of those things where we're all going to roll the dice now and see who has managed this bit of time correctly.
Mm-hmm. And at least you have your mindset now to be able to deal with that.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think I've managed the lockdown quite well. I think I'm still motivated and still fully prepared. And, you know, we talk about me never giving up. I am goal orientated. Like I will give up if there's no goal. I think I definitely respond well to having something set in the diary that I need to be ready for. And now that we've got that, I think it's definitely easy for me to just get up and train and go.
Do you love a bit of manifestation as well, babe?
Yeah, I do. I didn't used to. I just try and manifest me doing everything correctly. I don't manifest me standing on the podium with a medal, just because it's just like a dream, isn't it? It's a nice dream, but I don't think it gets you any closer to it. I think you need to do the things. You need to manifest what needs to be done in order to get that.
I love that. Well, we are going to take a break now, but we're going to come back. And in the next part, we're going to be talking more about your journey towards being a world champion, babe, on and off that track, honey. So join us after the break. And welcome back to Make It Rain, and we are joined by world heptathlon / championship babe, it's KJT. Welcome back, babe. One of the things I need to ask you about, because I'm just gonna get real here, I can barely do 2 days of exercise in a row. And when I was a kid, I actually used to fake not bringing my PE kit to school, and my mum actually got called up. I had to go into school to talk about it. Oh, knowing no. That I went off to school every single day of it, but just didn't want to do it. I just need to know, babe, do you ever just wake up in the morning and just go, not today, hon, I can't be bothered with this exercise malarkey?
Yeah, it's all the time. It's definitely all the time. And I do feel like we live in a world where, like, especially on social media, where athletes or Olympic athletes or any type of person who's got Instagram is just showing you the best, like, putting the best foot forward. And it's not realistic to me anyway, if I'm speaking personally. Like, I'll have days where I don't want to go to the track, and I'll have days, especially mid-lockdown, where I knew I didn't have a goal for another year. I didn't need to be at my top fitness levels until the Olympics, and that was like, what, 16 months away at the time, and I just didn't go to the track. I didn't, you know, try and do my exercises for that day. And I think it is very normal to feel like that. And yeah, it does sometimes not get me down, but I do get worried about like the young athletes who are like looking at my Instagram or other people's Instagram, and they think that they need to be on form every single day. They need to be, you know, have a completely pure mind where it's just like track, sleep, repeat, eat, track, sleep, repeat, eat. And I think it's very normal to have these emotions where, you know, you're not always motivated and you go through different phases. And I think that's the same with with life. You just go through phases and different emotions and you just need to go with it. And sometimes you can go to the track and just tick off a box of just doing it. You know, if you are not motivated to do a run one day, or you think you need to, you know, be beating like whatever time you've got, or you just don't want to go out, just set yourself smaller goals and just know that you've achieved something, and that's okay as well.
I think as well, it's so hard to be an athlete. It's so hard as humans to keep ourselves motivated anyway, isn't it? And I think that it's harder now than ever, because if it's hard for someone like you, who's such an amazing professional athlete, to stay motivated, it makes you think about how difficult it must be right now for younger sports stars who are coming up in this climate, in this context. What kind of worries do you have for them coming up? And if you could give them advice, what would you want to say to them?
It's hard enough, you know, track and field. It's very hard to, when I was growing up, you know, to stay in the sport, going through my teenage years when you have distractions and you have exams and, you know, you haven't got time to go out and dedicate yourself to a completely, you know, thing that, you know, your teachers may not be saying, like, you need to do exams and stuff. So I think at the time now, when it's hard for me to gain access to a track or gain access to a gym and keep up my training when I'm a professional athlete, I think it's going to be almost impossible for the grassroots sports to be, you know, staying in the sport and keeping the love for the sport, because it's one of the things that went first and it's one of the things that, you know, is shut down first. So I think it's very tough to, and I understand, I've had some girls message me on Instagram, and young athletes, not just girls, saying, you know, my track short, what should I do? And I think just try and keep the love for the sport, just do what you can, like, even supporting like athletes and watching athletics, then you have plenty of time to, you know, get back to it. And I got to thank athletics for so much in my life. So I just hope that, you know, the next generation of kids don't miss an opportunity to do what I've done.
What was it like for you being a mixed race girl growing up in Liverpool when you were growing up? What was your experience of growing up like for you?
I had a happy childhood. I've obviously been exposed to, you know, bits of racism here and there, and it's something that, you know, I sort of tucked away until not too long ago. But when I look back on my childhood, you know, it was one of those things, like, I love football. I always hung around with the boys. I would wear full football kits. I'd be playing on the street. Like, I was a child who played out, and it was one of those things where my childhood was so good. But then, yeah, when you think about, if I'm talking about racism, like, yeah, I did get exposed to that when I was definitely younger. But I do look back on my childhood with fond memories.
When do you remember first coming exposed to racism?
In year four. I think it was definitely, like, from a young age. You know, I was one of the only people of person of colour in my whole school, maybe in my year, definitely in my whole school. So yeah, it was one of those things where it's like, it's obviously that one, what I'm talking about in particular, was outright racism. But I think I didn't really notice it, you know, until I look back and I think about things like, even myself, like, I understand that I'm in a privileged position because I'm, you know, biracial, and I think I understand that I have privileges. But, like, one of the things that, you know, even I've been experienced to is myself, like, I wanted to relax my own hair when I was 9. Like, I begged my mum to relax my hair, and because I knew my hair was different, without understanding why I didn't want that hair. So I think it's those things, those microaggressions, where it plays a part of, like, just how you think. And, you know, I used to wear weaves growing up and stuff. Like, I completely rejected, like, my natural hair. So it's when you think and look back and reflect on, you know, your race and growing up and where you stand and when to speak out, I think, yeah, last year it was important for me to speak out. But I also didn't really look at my history in that much depth until last year too.
What did the resurgence of the Black Lives Matter movement do for you in terms of making you reflect, and how did it make you reflect on your experiences and almost your position in society today as well?
It did just that. It made me reflect. It made me think about my experiences, what I experienced growing up. It made me think about my actions. Like, sometimes Like I didn't speak up when I saw that or experienced that. I just left it to not be the trouble maker or the trouble causer, or not bring any drama or stress. Because one of my favorite things that I live by, you know, is I'm not a confrontational person. Mm. I don't like to argue. I don't like to bring unnecessary tension in a group. But yeah, it's just one of those things now that I would not choose to do that anymore. And I think that's definitely something that's changed.
Mm. Do you still experience microaggressions?
Yeah, I think I definitely can experience microaggressions. So obviously, I'm mixed race. So my father's Bahamian, my mother's white. And like when I'm darker, I can go different shades. And I feel like when I'm darker and I've got box braids on, I'm definitely treated differently to when, you know, it's been the winter time and I've got like a, you know, a straight weave. I feel like it's definitely people will treat you differently. And I think that is one of those things that I'm trying to do myself more now. I'm trying to, you know, be more natural. I'm trying to not turn up to one of my first experiences at a photo shoot. I remember being in the chair for about 3 hours with two people trying to straighten my hair. And it was one of those things where it's like, okay, I'm never ever again turning up to a photo shoot without pin straight hair, because this is too long and eating into the time. And I remember every single photo shoot since then, I've always went above and beyond. Like I've flown back to London to get my hair done. I've flown somebody out to do my own hair before I go to a photo shoot. And it's all those little things that I'll do.
How represented did you feel in a beauty spectrum when you were growing up, and how much representation did you feel like you had as a young girl growing up?
I don't feel like I had that much representation. We grew up in the size zero era. So we grew up.
Oh, we did.
It was completely it was completely different time back then. Like it was crazy, like that, but the world goes through different fashion trends, and that fashion trend at the time was to almost like not eat. And like that was impossible for me growing up and training and being an athlete. And as a result of that, like I had muscles, and I wasn't like, I wish I grew up in a time where it's like now, where it's like strong is good. Like to be strong, that's attractive and that's healthy. So yeah, I didn't feel represented at all. And I used to, you know, try and hide my muscles. I used to try and change my hair. I can just hope that like the world is changing, and I think the world has changed, but it does still worry me that like bodies can be trends. It's not just fashion. It's like actual bodies as trends. It blows my mind.
Oh my God, it's crazy. And I think it's so hard as a teenager anyway, when you're discovering yourself and you're discovering your body and becoming at one with it and understanding it, to also then be going through it where your body is not necessarily conforming to the trend of the time. Like, how was that quite a difficult experience for you?
Yeah, it was difficult for me because I didn't want to go to a competition and compete in, you know, you see what we compete in. We compete in like knickers basically and crop tops. And I remember I used to like practice like what I'd be wearing, but I used to like look at myself in the mirror and like see what other people would be seeing when I stand on the start line and start stressing out and thinking about my legs and thinking about, you know, oh God, maybe I should just, you know, put like a longer top on and stuff like this, when I should be thinking like I'm, what, 14, 15 year old girl going through, you know, adolescence and puberty and stuff. And I shouldn't be thinking about what people are seeing. I should be thinking about my athletics performance. I should be thinking about what I need to do on the track. I shouldn't ever have to. And that used to be the main worry for me. I used to, you know, drive myself crazy, like thinking about, oh God, I'm gonna have to compete. And I did that on a worldwide level, like in the London 2012 Olympics. Think how many people watched that. And I think that was a turning point where it was just like, up until that point, until I was 19, I had those problems. And that was a turning point where it was like, well, everyone's seen it now, everyone's seen what I look like, so that's it. I think I started to change after that.
What do you think being an athlete's taught you about the power of your body? And do you feel almost more in tune with it and empowered by it than ever right now?
my body is what I use to do my job. Like, I think the power of my body, I can only relate it to, have you seen that like meme where they say like, when you have a cold, you start to regret all the times that you just breathed freely.
Yes.
Like when you have a blocked nose. I always feel like when I have an injury, like I always go, oh God, I use my Achilles to walk. You know what I mean? Like, oh, my knee, like, I'm walking up the stairs and my knee's like hurting. Like, I use my knees to get up the stairs. Like, it's those things, like, my body has so much power and all these like little bits help me perform. When I'm injured, I take it for granted. I'm like, I need to treat my body with the best. Yeah, my body is what I use for my job instead of thinking, oh God, these thighs are looking big. I could do without putting on some pants and going and running. I don't want to, like, I don't think those thoughts anymore. And I'm very happy that I've just grown out of that.
Mm.
But yeah, it's very difficult when I was younger, growing up.
Did you feel able to talk about it when you were going through it?
No, it was literally only with my mum. I didn't used to believe it because she loves me, do you know what I mean? Somebody who loves you won't say anything. She's like, oh no, you look great. I'm like, I didn't say I don't look great, I look fat. Like one of those.
Mm. It seems like you found so much faith in your own voice now, and it feels like you're more empowered by your own voice than ever before. If you could go back and be a friend to yourself at a time in your life, when would it have been, and what would you want to say to that version of you?
Probably after the Rio Olympics. I've always had a lot of belief in myself that I was able to, if I got my act together, I would be able to do something decent. That's what I always thought. And then after Rio, I stopped believing in that as well. Mm. I thought, I'm never going to get my act together and I'm never going to be able to perform. I started believing everybody else. So I think after Rio, I would definitely just go back and say, good times are coming.
Good times are coming, honey, and they're going to involve some new accessories, aka a gold medal. And you are going to wear that with pride. Which, speaking of which, do you feel like you wear your crown with pride now, Katerina?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I have got green hair at the minute. I'm either going through something right now or I'm really comfortable in myself. I don't know which one. No, I'm joking. No, I do. I think, yeah, I'm definitely more comfortable, confident than I do. I would say, yeah, I wear my crown with pride.
Yes! How good does it feel to be able to say that?
Yeah, no, it's good. And it's always a therapy session with you. It's good. It's definitely good. I don't think I'm fully there yet. Like, I've got to be honest with myself. I'm definitely not fully there. I definitely do have some down days, but I do feel like I'm growing into the person that I want to be.
Yes. I mean, you're the person I want to be, because I always say you are like my role model, because I just think that anyone who's listening to this should look at you as such an amazing example of never giving up when the chips are down, the hurdles are up, and you've got to get on them, you've got to jump over them, you've got to get to the finishing line. And you're such an amazing symbol for that. And I just think that you're amazing. And oh, babe, I just freaking love you.
Love you. I'm really glad you picked up on that, because one of my values is like not giving up. Like what I spoke to you about before, the guy who helps me, Steve, he always says, like, and I think this is the best advice I've ever been given, like, he always says, you need to decide your own values, just whether that be like 3 or 5 things, and if you stick to them, like, that's all you need to do. So I think when I get myself into a situation where it's looking like it's going to be hard or tough, like, if I give up, I'll never be able to forgive myself when I look back on that. So I think, but if that's one of my values and you've picked up on that, I think it's really important to me that, you know, I give everything 100%. Otherwise, I'm never going to be proud of myself.
I love that. Why, you persistent queen, we have some hard-hitting questions that we end every single episode on. So, Kat, are you ready for some hard-hitting questions,
no,
babes?
No. I'm so...
She's born ready.
Okay, let's go.
So, what's the time you've made it rain in your life and worn your crown with the most pride?
Oh God. My mind's gone blank now. I've been talking too much.
I also love, as like the medalist winning queen you are, that you're literally just like, oh my God, I need to think about when I've been most proud of myself. Like, I really need to think about it, which is the most, that's what's so special about you, is that you literally achieved this stuff and you're like, oh my God, I need to think about when I've been the most proud of myself. Which is amazing.
Oh God, I don't know. When have I been proud? Oh God, okay, so this is throwback one. In 2017 it was, and I had been set up at this point from my, it was set up in Montpellier in France. So I had my new coach, I had my sort of growing confidence. I remember getting to this competition, it was an athletics one, and got it. And I came fourth on a PB, but the three people in front of me scored like massive scores. Like, absolutely massive scores. And I always thought, like I said before, I always thought, as long as I get my act together, I'll be able to win. And at that point, I was like, if I get my act together, I'm not even going to stand on this rostrum. I'm going to come fourth, because these people have absolutely smashed it. And this was like, this was the couple months before a home world champs. But at that point, I've got a picture of myself, and it was like me being gutted on the finishing line. I remember putting that picture as my background and thinking, okay, I'm not going to let that sort of stop me now. And I think that might have been the point where I was like, given, like, that might have been the turning point for me. And I remember just like thinking, I need to just fill my potential, instead of like aiming for this rostrum. And I think that was the changing point. So I'm proud of myself for not sort of getting back into old habits from that point. And I think that's where I'm most proud, where my career sort of changed.
I love how you made that your screensaver, and most people are like, even like, hot boys, puppies, like, no. Stunning landscape. You're like, no, I'm going to put it of a moment when I felt like I failed. And that is incredible.
I had such a bad habit of doing that. I don't do that anymore. But in 2013, I think I came fifth. I remember one of the girls has, you know, like a flag behind them, that flag picture that they all like put the flag behind. Yes, I've won the medal. Yeah. I remember I'm like dying in the background after 800, like trying to like get past this flag picture. I'm like literally like, and I put that as my background. And then in 2015, I put my foot where I did a no jump as my background too. But then when we speak about manifestation, I'm like, am I manifesting all these bad things? Like, if I'm constantly looking at myself as a failure, am I going to be that failure in that picture? And I was like overthinking a lot, so I stopped it. But it did give me a lot of motivation at the time.
I just want to live in your mind, babe.
You don't. Like... You really, really don't.
It sounds busy.
It's very... It works over time.
And in the reign of your life, what is the one rule you will always live by?
The one rule I will always live by is regret will haunt you more than failure. So what I said before about not giving up, I think to not go for stuff and to just sit back and not even try, I think is something that one day you will look back on and think, why didn't I just do that? Like, it's very hard to put yourself out there for failure, put yourself out there for criticism. But if I don't try and do it, then, you know, you're never going to reap the benefits of, you know, when it actually works out. So yeah, regret will haunt you more than failure.
Oh my God, I love that line. Babe, you need to get another t-shirt.
Yeah. Imagine if I just wrote that and reveal that was underneath my shirt. Like a football celebration.
Yeah, full football celebration. That's what you can do next time at the Olympics when you win the gold medal. That can be your celebration move. Yeah. I'll be here for it. But I think that's such a powerful statement, that because I know we've talked a lot about sport, but that is fundamentally these messages and the characteristics and the change of the mindset that you're talking about are so transferable to everyday life. Like, I live in fear of failure. So, like, for instance, I was saying to someone the other day about this podcast, I was like, oh my God, imagine if this is a failure, and what am I going to do? And it's going to be really embarrassing. I'm going to have like egg on my face. And then you're like, why are you talking yourself into it already being a failure before you're talking about it being a success, right?
Yeah.
And you, I would always regret not doing it rather than doing it, right? Yeah. Like, so I think everyone has those moments. And I think it's so important for people to talk about that, like you were saying earlier, especially for young athletes and young women who are out there, and young guys, anyone who's struggling to wake up every day or find motivation or has had stumbling blocks in their life. You need to keep going, because ultimately, like you've shown, the failure has actually become a success in a way, hasn't it?
Yeah, no, completely. And I know that, you know, when I step onto the track now, I know that every single thing that could possibly go wrong has gone wrong. And I'm still here. I'm still standing here. I'm still committed to it. I'm still doing it. And you know what? What else is that? If it happens again, I'll be okay, because I've already been through it, and that has definitely made me stronger. And I think, yeah, in order to do that and then shy away from trying again, is just, you haven't sort of, try and learn the lesson of why it went wrong, and then don't do it again, and don't let it define you as well. I think a lot of the time, you know, you're defined by your job, but you should be defined by your values and as a person. And yeah, and then your job is just like a little fun thing that you absolutely love doing, and clearly, like, you're very good at this, what we're doing now, and I absolutely love all of this for you. And I think, yeah, I think it's that inner chimp as well. What's stopping you? There's just like an emotional sort of hijack when all those thoughts are coming to your head. That's like your chimp just trying to hijack your human, and your need to think more rational thoughts.
Well, babe, I feel like the tables have turned. I've now gone to therapy with you. I feel like, oh, you were speaking to me right then, into my mind. I was like, oh my God, yes. I was like mentally taking notes as you were saying that.
If Steve Peters ever listened to that, he'd be like, look at her talking like she knows it all, like she didn't have a meltdown last week.
Well, Steve, if you're listening, I'm now also a Steve stan, so thank you. And I'm just going to go forth and be a bit more KJT. So I hope all of you guys who've listened to this are going to be a bit more KJT too. And babe, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to me. I appreciate it. I appreciate you. And thanks for all the messages you've given us today.
No problem. I've really had a lot of fun. So thank you for having me.
Thanks, babes. Thank you so much for listening, babes. I hope you enjoyed this conversation just as much as I have, and you're going to take so much away from it. And if you haven't already subscribed, make sure you subscribe or follow wherever you get your podcast from, so you'll know which amazing queen is joining me next time. And make sure you share this around your friends and get those conversations going, because we need each other more now than ever before. Hi babes, me again. Just wanted to tell you about something very exciting. I can't believe I'm about to tell you this, but I've written a book and it's called Great Chat. As you know, I love to chat, plot spoiler, and I love talking to people about their lives because, as I always say, talking and listening is so powerful. The book is all about how you can master conversation and transform your life, just like it has for me. I've used my experience from all the amazing interviews I've been lucky enough to do, as well as a load of research, to help you deal with everything from making new friends to embracing difficult discussions. Great Chat should never be underestimated. It can truly improve your well-being, allow you to create the life you want, and bring the connections you are so deserving of, babes. You can pre-order Great Chat today in hardback, ebook, and audiobook, read by me, no less, and it's out on the 20th of June.